You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host of the most, Nikki Kourula. We're going to jump right into this interview. I've got a very special guest tonight, trumpet player extraordinaire, Matt Shulman, a.k.a. Matt Von Redrick. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. You always have a problem with my stage name. It's Matt Von Roderick.
Matt Von Roderick. Damn it!
But I appreciate the effort, and it's great to see you, brother.
Likewise. So tell me, how did you get that name? How did you come up with that name?
Well, that's a name that is partially family names and partially my middle name and my given name. So my birth name is Matthew Benjamin Roderick Shulman. So I took Matt, you know, and Roderick was one of my middle names. And my mother's maiden name was Elizabeth Von Stackelberg. So I took the Von from there. And, you know, as I sort of was developing more of my own personal sound and getting to a place where I wanted to move to Los Angeles from the East Coast. I had been in New York for 12 years and wanted to sort of reinvent myself and give myself something to step into. A performance name, a stage name, felt like a fun thing to do. And I was inspired by all the jazz, who really had a cool thing going with jazz royalty. You know what I mean? Like Nat King Cole or Duke Ellington or Count Basie or King Oliver. You see what I mean? It's all like that kind of thing where it's like, and because, you know, royalty, like, it's fun to like poke fun at royalty because we're all royalty. We're all, kings and queens and gods and goddesses and all that. And so we should step into the best version of ourselves. And ultimately, you know, when we're in our adult life, we have the opportunity to shape our life as we want it to be. So I'm all about, like, you know, personal development, human potential and all that stuff. That's what drives me so much in terms of my creativity and my music. So that's, you know, for a long answer, that's really what it's about. That's why I'm Matt Von Roderick at this point. So,
well, you know, what's cool too. It's like, I always feel like, you know, every artist kind of comes into their own. And there's always like a crossroads where it's either a name that gives you that entity, or it's maybe a clothing, or maybe it's a sound, or maybe it's all of those things rolled into one. So that was definitely one of the questions I want to ask you, because you never made that statement when you switched your handles and it was like, okay, this is it. This is my new thing. Yeah. So I love it. I love it. I think it's amazing. And I think it's, you know, it separates what I like about it, because I do the same thing with my own professional career. It's like most people know me as Nikki, but my birth name is Nikhil Kourula. So I always know when people call me Nikhil, they know me from the professional side of my life versus if anybody calls me Nikki, they know me from the hang or just like being, you know.
Right. I know you both, you know, but I call you Nikki anyway.
Yeah, man. Oh, absolutely. No, but I mean, it's cool because it's like there's a separation. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you kind of feel the same, that there's like the artistic side of you, and then there's that like human side of you. And sometimes they cross into each other, but it's also nice to separate them, because it's nice to wear different hats, because, you know, like there's a different kind of I guess it's an aura or like a creative energy that you have to have when you're
absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah, and we're creating it, you know. It's all a creation. And ultimately then you find out that, you know, the Nikki part, the hang part, you know, is also something that you're creating as well. And you're like, that's interesting. That's also a story that you're telling yourself as well as the people around you. So it's all, you know, malleable. It's all an entirely malleable world in some ways.
Well, what's cool is, you know, every artist has gone through it. I've been going through this heavy Jimi Hendrix phase.
Yeah.
You know, when he started his career and he was playing with Little Richard and Wilson Pickett, he was always known as Jimmy James. And not many people know that, you know. So you know, he had all these different names until he finally came back around to Jimi Hendrix. And that he was like, you know, this is my birth name. I want this to be the thing. And that's the thing. So, you know, everybody has their, like, attachments to it that give it beautiful magic, you know, as I like to think about it. So let's go way back, though. Where did you grow up, and what was the moment of zen that made you want to be a musician? What was the song or the moment?
That's interesting. Well, I grew up in a small town in Lindenville, Vermont, and definitely very influential for me is the fact that my parents, my mother, rest her soul, my father, who's thankfully still around and in Vermont, were both musicians. So my dad is a classical violinist. My mother was a classical pianist. Wow. And so I grew up hearing them, you know, playing all that repertoire in the house all the time. I started on their instruments. I started on piano and violin at ages 3 and 4. And I didn't really take to either of them. I kind of felt like, you know, although, and it's such a huge influence for me, classical music, and I've studied it, and I play a fair amount of it on the trumpet. I felt like I could never really make it my own at that point in my life. Well, obviously when I was that young, but I mean, even, you know, in teenage and early 20s, I felt like I had my parents looking over my shoulder in a way. And when I found jazz and the trumpet, which I was age 12 or 13 around then, I found myself inside of the music, and I found freedom.
Yeah.
I got freedom, you know, because that's what jazz is. And it's no mistake that it was born out of African-American experience, you know, and it's a hybrid of all these different cultures coming together through the African-American experience in America. And it is this place where you can totally, like, be completely free and express exactly as you are in the moment. It doesn't matter. This is how I feel right now. So this is how I'm playing the song this time, right here, right now. You know,
there's so much sophistication with that that people don't necessarily understand, because you're composing in the moment. Let's say it like as it is.
It is. Yeah. It's spontaneous composition. You have to, you have to be able to think like and be studied as a composer. You have to know all the, you know, obviously music theory and harmony and all that stuff to really do this art form justice. And yeah, then in the moment you're composing and there's no eraser where when you're composing and it's not a live performance, you know, you can go back and you can edit, or you can, you know, if you're doing it on Pro Tools, whatever, you can change something, but this is a live performance. So it's a composition that's happening. And there's something really cool about that too. Like there's Zen forms of art that are drawn into the sand and then it's washed away.
I watched that same thing. These old monks do that.
Yes, the monks. Yeah. And it's there and it's beautiful. It's, and you're like, oh wow, I need, psh.
Yeah. I always think that's crazy. Sometimes they'll take like months to do them. Yeah. And then when it's finished, they just wipe it out. I'm like, no way. No picture, nothing. They're like, no, you can't be attached to the destination. I'm like, right? That's crazy, but it's also super zen, you know?
Yeah. And so jazz is very much like that. So I think that's what drew me to jazz, was the freedom of expression. And I know that, you know, one of the first improvised solos that I took in a concert in front of a live audience was very formative for me too, because I felt like I was floating. I felt like I was transported into a portal where, like, you know, time was stopped, everything suspended.
Right.
And I just never forget that feeling. So that was, there's a magic that happens when you, you know, genuinely open yourself up to the sacred moment that's happening right now and say, what am I hearing? What am I feeling? What's coming to me? And when you do that, that's when you're really improvising. And, you know, unfortunately, some people are not improvising. And I have a friend in New York who has a whole class based on getting people to remember to, you know, tap into their divine musicality. And, you know, it's interesting because with the proliferation of, you know, jazz education, people have thought, you know, how do I do it right?
Right. Right.
And then it gets, you know, it gets weird because, you know, you're not really in the moment at that point. You're not really improvising. So it's interesting to see people who are improvising from maybe phrase to phrase or from, you know, note to note. I would say Keith Jarrett is, you can hear he's improvising note to note.
Right.
You know?
So fluid.
Yeah. Herbie Hancock's also been a huge influence for me lately. An amazing human being as well. We've had some really good conversations recently, and he attended one of my virtual concerts, which is something that I was doing over the past year, you know, because of the COVID and everything and all that. And that was a really cool thing for me. I ended up actually meeting a lot of new people and gaining a lot of new fans that way that I wouldn't have had all over the world, in Portugal, in Tokyo, in Italy, you know, just all over the world. So
awesome. This,
that wasn't happening before in the same way. So, yeah.
Well, a little fun fact. When I was coming out of music school, I remember I was just about to graduate. Or no, I just graduated. And we got this opportunity through USC that we got to play a concert with Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter, and Nestor Torres. And we were playing, like, they played main, like, he played Maiden Voyage solo, and then he and Wayne did some, like, new tunes off their latest record. This is, like, from 2003. So we got to, like, hang with them in their dressing room. It was, like, such a profound experience for me, but it just also made me respect the just level of musicianship in jazz musicians in general, which I've always had. You and I actually have a parallel because I studied opera and classical music in music school. So classical music, I feel like, is the best technique. And that's why you got some of the best technique with your sound, man, because you have that classical background. And what's cool is, like, classical music probably gave you the technique to know how to play the notes, and then jazz gave you the freedom to show you what to play. And I always find that jazz musicians are the most sophisticated of all musicians. And I really feel like, you know, it's one of America's greatest exports, and it brings so many cultures together, but it really brings all the cultures together for the moment. You know what I mean? Like, to live in the moment and to experience it in the moment. And that's why I have so much respect for jazz musicians, because even when you play a great solo, you're already on to the next thing because that solo's behind you. And it's like a very enlightened way to look at art, because most musicians or most artists in general, we want to celebrate the art after it's finished. So I want to ask you, this is a music nerd question for me. When you're making a record or you're, you know, composing a song, how do you know when you have the solo that you want to leave on a record? Or how do you know when you've made the composition that you're like, okay, this is what I want to do? Because the mental side of the jazz musician is very different than a rock musician or a composer.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And, you know, it's different for different projects for me, because, you know, this starts to get into another aspect of my, you know, creativity, in that I'm a jazz artist, right? I'm a jazz artist fundamentally. However, like many, you know, we were just talking about Herbie Hancock, for example, I've been interested in going beyond jazz in a sense. I don't know if you can really go beyond it, but broadening my horizons so that I'm incorporating all the things that you can learn from pop music. You know, certainly classical music, as we said, you know, as a base. But the thing about making a record in the pop music world is that, as you know, you refine and you refine and you refine until you get it exactly the way you want it. And this is going to live in perpetuity as a certain, this one thing. But also that happens when you just go in and you just set up a couple mics and everybody just plays together in one room, boom, and that's your jazz album. That's going to live, you know, on in time as well. It's just a different thing. I've made records like that, and they're really cool. You know, I've made records like that, and it's just what happened in the moment, and that's it. So there's no picking and choosing at that point. Maybe there's a different take, you know what I mean, of the song that you did. But that's it. It's what you played in the moment. That's what happened, you know.
That's crazy, though. It's like you only get like one or two takes, and then the band is killing you. You're like, okay, that's the solo. Even if it's not the solo that you want, that's crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, that'll happen. If it's not your album, you know, that could happen where you're like, oh, I like the other one, you know. But if it's your album, you can say, well, I like that take, so you're going to use that. But that's part of the beauty of it. It goes back to what we were saying with the Zen monks and all that. And that, you know, it happens. It's washed away. Boom. That's it. Just let it go. It's what happened in the moment, you know? And I guess it's not going away because it's on an album, but, but you know what I'm saying? Like you have to let go. You have to let go of it and see it as something that is just part of that moment.
You know what? You just spread some wisdom right there. Because honestly, I fight that all the time when I make records, when I'm doing solos and stuff. It's just like, I find myself always kind of like beating myself up about what I'm, because you know, every player wants to say something. You want to say something. Yeah. It's a statement, or, you know, you want to, it's almost like you're this perfect combination of like showing what you've been working on and then also expressing something that's in the moment and also trying to reach for something. Like I always find that my best solos are when I'm reaching for something that I wasn't sure if it was possible or that I was able to do. Those I find are like the best when you're able to get to that place. So I love hearing this from jazz musicians because it teaches me. So thank you. I got a question for you. Growing up in Vermont, who was like the trumpet player that you started being the most inspired by? I have a couple of guesses, but I want to hear from you.
Okay. You mean like the master jazz artist.
Yeah, or it could be a teacher or something local. It could be
I would say a couple of things. One thing is that I have found out that, and my older half brother, who unfortunately also passed away just a few years ago, and it was like all around the same time, you know, like life is interesting like that. And far too young for him to pass away. But anyway, we have a friend in common that also did. So that's part of life. You know, people come and they go, and we don't know how long we're going to be here for. So that's a whole nother conversation. But anyway, he was a trumpet player also. Wow. And not professionally, but he loved it and he loved jazz. And, you know, we had different fathers, but the same mother. And so, you know, my mother was not with his father anymore when she was with my father, you know? And so when I was in the crib, apparently, before I don't think any memories, he was like blasting Dizzy Gillespie, on a record player. So that's what I found. And I'm like, wow, that's in there. And Dizzy is, an influence for me. But I would say I was thinking about this earlier today, actually. My top two influences are Miles Davis and Freddie Hubbard. But I would not say that Freddie Hubbard, but Miles was an influence that happened, you know, while I was just starting to play. You know, Freddie, yes, to a certain degree, but I would say that happened a little bit later. That happened more like in music school. But Miles right away. Also, it wasn't always just trumpet players. I was influenced heavily by Charlie Parker, you know?
My favorite, dude. You're listening to all my favorite cats, dude.
Yeah. There's like ostriches outside, like making these wild noises. My girlfriend's place in the Palos Verdes area, and there's like these ostriches in the trees. It's different than...
I'm in Africa right now.
Different than when I'm... Yeah, either there... which I have been to Egypt, which is really cool. Or actually, I'm usually at my place in Hollywood, you know? Anyway.
I love that you mentioned those two players. I met Miles Davis when I was a kid, man.
Wow.
I actually sang back up at the Grammy Awards. And, dude, I wasn't into Miles Davis at the time, all right? So Miles Davis, I got to sit in the Shrine Auditorium. And, like, there's a lot of downtime. You rehearse everything the day before. And then the next day is the actual show. So the day before, you're just sitting and watching everybody do their comedy, like, routines and stuff. And I got to sit in Shrine Auditorium with maybe seven people and watch Miles Davis rehearse. And I was so ignorant to who he was, but I was just listening and I was captivated. I was 11 years old and I was like, someday this guy's going to be huge. Not knowing that he was already a legend, dude. So that's I ended up bumping into him backstage. And I was just like, oh, man, I had just seen him rehearse. And I was like, oh, man, I'm sorry. And he's like, yeah, that's cool. He was just very laid back. But he had a vibe that was very intimidating because he was already a supreme legend, dude. He had a vibe. I just remember feeling his presence right around the corner before I even bumped into him. It was very something that you know,
and you didn't really know who he was, so you were like, you know what, I just gotta tell you, you got something there. Keep going, keep practicing. You got something special.
Thank God I didn't say that. But you know what was so cool? I was thinking, I was like, man, this guy's gonna be so huge someday, not knowing because I'm so dumb. But then when I went backstage, I ended up bumping into him, and it was just like this surreal moment that I was so excited that I just saw him play, and then I got this real brief encounter. And yeah, man, it was just like one of those surreal experiences. But Miles Davis, when I went to music school, became this huge influence on me, especially to like all the bebop stuff and the Bitches Brew, Kinda Blue, all those records. So I love when trumpet players obviously say the obvious choice, because he was a constant innovator and always just kind of like playing for the music and not caring what the trends were and just always elevating as much as possible. So I know when trumpet players or any musicians use him as like their compass of influences, it's like, you're on the right track, man, because that guy, he was also classically trained and also knew, you know, both how to kind of jump between styles, but you know, always had a vision of what he was going to play, how he was going to play. And Freddie Hubbard, man, he's one of the cats of all time, dude. So that's amazing that you got those experiences. And you know what? I've known you for a while. I never knew that your brother was a trumpet player. So, of course, you're going to get that family influence. I always tell my older brother, he's not a musician either, but I feel like being a younger brother and being a musician, you're always trying to impress your older brother. You know what I mean? There's always something like, yo, man, you showed me some of the best music ever. So, you know, I'm sure your brother's still listening, wherever he is in the spirit world, still listening to what you're reaching for, man. So let me ask you this. When you're writing music, what are you kind of thinking about? You know, because like jazz is, you know, it's evolved into so many different art forms. You know, for one, you know, it started kind of being like taking pop music, like show tunes, like Cole Porter, and then making these instrumental versions that really far surpass the originals. Mm-hmm. How do you feel when you're writing jazz? Are you throwing it back to certain eras of jazz that you love? Are you trying to innovate something new on some levels, a combination?
Well, yeah, that goes back to what we were saying before. You know, I've done albums where it is sort of a more classic jazz, you know, straight ahead type of thing. I've done other albums where I'm kind of, you know, bending and, you know, merging genres into a sort of hybrid. And I'm actually writing a song right now called That Classic. I'm not going to, you know, say much more about it because it's, you know, I got to finish it and put it out. But it's a song that's going to be done with a whole production team. And it's like, you know, it's not going to be just two mics set up, you know, with a band in a room, you know? So that is a little bit more conceptual, you know? And then there's others that are just more off the cuff, you know, but I would say sometimes it's a feeling, it's a place I want to get to, like, oh, I want a song, you know, if it's more like as a vehicle for improvisation, because sometimes you'll write for that too. You say, I want something that's going to have this vibe. So, you know, I can go to this place with the band and we can get into this kind of creative, you know, palette. Then you're writing for that, you know, and I would say even more recently, although I was, you know, already thinking about it early on too, I'm thinking about the audience experience, you know? And I think that gets lost, unfortunately, with a lot of jazz musicians, or it's when a jazz musician becomes a jazz artist.
Right.
Because a musician is a musician who is, you know, concerned more with just the music and the craft. And there's something amazingly beautiful about that. However, an artist is concerned with humanity and speaking to the people that are in the audience. And Don Was, who's the president of Blue Note Records right now, you know, I had a conversation with him. He heard me open up for Derek Hodge, who's an amazing bass player up over at the Mint. And he said, you know, he's looking for artists that are generous with their music. So to be generous is thinking about the audience experience. So, you know, when you're writing a song, it's like, is this really just for me? No, it's how is it going to affect people? How is it going to serve people? So after, when you start to think on a, you know, a higher level, hopefully is when you're, you know, serving people. How can I serve? That's why we're here as human beings. And, you know, music is our medium to do so. How can we lift spirits? You know, how can we take people on a journey? How can we remind people of who they are fundamentally as human beings, of, you know, our infinite potential? And music can do that. And it's not just instrumental too, because we talked about that because of jazz. However, keep in mind, a lot of jazz does have lyrics and vocals. And that brings, of course, to, you know, what I've been doing, where I'm also influenced by very much by a Chet Baker, for example,
who
sang and played. And there's something magical that happens when you first, you play a melody and then you sing it. And then you go and play an improvised solo. It's like stepping up, ratcheting up each time, you know, with the level, and abstracting it each time too from the melody, and connecting to your throat chakra and your root chakra and all your chakras, you know, because you're not just, you know, playing through this hunk of brass, which is amazing, but you're also connecting just with the instrument that is you singing. I fall in love too easily. You know, it's like, that's what's coming out of you.
And yeah, you, man. Dude, I got to get you some background vocals next time.
Right.
Well, you know,
the thing, a lot of the jazz artists.
Sorry, go ahead. You can go ahead.
Okay, well, I was going to say, like for a Chet Baker, for example, or Louis Armstrong, who is really, you know, the father of a lot of jazz, and obviously the standard bearer for that, singing and playing the trumpet, is they tend to sing and play, or play the trumpet as they sang and sang as they play the trumpet. And so it was this kind of, you know, same thing. I, however, tend to have this yin yang. So like I'm singing in more of this like smoother, you know, place. And that's how I play when I, you know, play with the mute sometimes too. But when I go open horn for an open horn solo, that's more like, you know, what would be known as like hot jazz, right? And it's more cool jazz when I'm singing. So for me, it's an opportunity to broaden what I do. You know,
and well, I love it because it's like you're accessing, you know, what you do as a jazz artist is you're connecting people to the art form again, because, you know, jazz used to be the hottest ticket, you know, in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. It was just the thing that people did because it was culturally so, you know, it was evolved, you know, it was the epitome of what you did socially. And what kills me is jazz music today doesn't have that same thing. And a lot of it's because music's being taken out of schools. There's a lack of education on what makes jazz so great. And I feel like there's also a lack of connection between the audience and jazz artists. Just like there has to be this center, the centering of the two, which I love that you're thinking about the audience when you're performing, because that is what it's all about. It's that audience experience. And once you write the song and create the song, it's no longer yours. That's what I tell people. It's like it becomes the world. So like when you're thinking about music on that level, I know it's resonating in people, and you can hear it in how you play, man. I heard it from one note. You can always tell when somebody can play from one note, you know? So let's play something. What do you want to play first?
Well, let's see. Why don't we start with Coexistence? Because that's just an instrumental feature, okay? And that is, you know, something that has a lot of my classic jazz roots in there. However, they're recontextualized into something much more modern. So it sort of, bridges both worlds that we've been discussing, that we've been talking about. So you can start with that one. It's fun. And then later on we could do I'm Old Fashioned, which is a cover of a classic. But this is an original of mine entitled Coexistence. I wrote it several years ago, and it's about the coexistence of opposites, of, you know, stillness and dynamic activity, you know, all things kind of coexisting at once and opposites together, unless I said the yin and yang.
Well, here it is. Here's coexistence.
Enjoy.
Dude, that is heavy, dude. That was awesome. Thank you, like a square pusher, like drum and bass. Like, oh man, that was so heavy, dude. I love that. Thank you. Yeah, that was wild. I got so many chills during that. What a great hook head solo vibe. It was, I thought it was tremendous, man. So awesome.
Yeah, that's become like a standard for me. You know, I keep playing that one, you know, throughout time. I never playing that song. It's got that I, you know, need to deal with in a lot of ways. So, and it, there's different iterations of it. Like I was saying, it keeps changing. So that's one recording of it that's has much more current modern technology, you know, and production. And there's others that are much more just like with me and acoustic bass, you know. Right.
Well, and also, like, that's got to be challenging for any drummer that's playing that, too.
True. Yeah, but there's some great drummers who play that stuff live, you know. Yeah.
Wild. Very, very cool and very current. That's what I love. It's like, you know, the reason I was asking you a lot of those questions about, like, what kind of things you're thinking about, I always love, like, bebop's like some of my favorite era of jazz.
Oh, yeah. Just,
you know, and I always love when people kind of go back to that. But jazz doesn't do that. You know what I mean? It's like, it's always pushing the envelope of like moving forward, just like all pop music is on some level, just like rock music is on some levels. And there's hints of those throwbacks. So what I like is like, you actually made it very current, but did like this old style arrangement, which I respect so much, man. So good.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And did you kind of have that concept when you were making the track? You wanted it to be drum and bass or kind of like heavy?
Yeah. You know, just different influences at the time. I think that's what happens. It's where we're at. It's what we've been exposed to, you know, the night before we went out and heard a concert, you know, and then we were inspired the next day when we're writing a song or whatever album you're checking out, whatever artist you're checking out at the time, whoever you're playing with, maybe you're on tour. You know, and there's certain places that you're getting to with the band. And so, yeah, it was just different types of music that I was checking out at that time that led me to that. And they all converged. You know,
that was your New York experience.
Exactly. And I did write that when I was in New York. And but I did that iteration of it, that version of it in Los Angeles.
I love it.
Which is a big part of why it's so current and modern, because LA is all, you know, about that. Like, but you know what's interesting is that you have to keep going back in order to make things current again, and in order to give them their root, you have to keep going back. So, you know, I'm always pushing the envelope, I'm always keeping it current, and at the same time I keep going back. And so I'm like, we have another track there. I'm old fashioned, and it's like, is this the same artist? You know, but it is absolutely the same artist. And
let's play that next. That's a
classic standard, and it's my opportunity to do it justice. You know, to take a standard and do it in that beautiful, beautiful classic way with strings and that sort of thing. And even at the end, though, you'll notice at the end of the song, I use my loop pedal. I create a whole like wash of sound, like a sound bath through live looping. And I do some spoken word poetry over it, you know? So I still take it into another direction at the end and really, you know, put my sort of signature stamp on it. But the whole thing is, if you just play a beautiful song, you're just being yourself too. You know, you don't always have to try to bend it to your will. You know, you can just let it speak.
Well, let's let Old Fashioned speak by Matt Von Roderick. Here it comes.
I think there's an announcement on this one. Yeah.
To start the show, give a warm round of applause and welcome to the stage, Matt Von Roderick.
slamming, man. That was so good, dude. Where can people find you if they want to find your music or they want to ask you to play on a session? Give all your social handles and your websites.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you see the name right there, it's mattvonroderick.com. That's my website, and there's contact information there.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
I would say, what spell? Okay, www.mattvonroderick.com. That's M-A-T-T von V as in victory, O-N as in Nancy, Roderick, R-O-D-E-R-I-C-K.com. And then the social media platform that I'm most active on is Instagram. And you can direct message me there. Please follow. That's where I'm really, you know, keeping things up to date and posting most often. So yeah, definitely there. And that's my handle there is kind of fun. It's easy to remember. It's Von Rockstar. So Von, V-O-N, Rockstar, at Von Rockstar, okay?
Matt, you've been a wonderful guest. I'm going to play another minute of this last song as we sign out. But thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for performing. We want to have you back on as a guest, maybe in about 9 or 10 months, and just see what else you're evolving the world with. And keep doing what you're doing, man. You're a beautiful talent, man, really.
Thank you. Really grateful for you. Grateful for you.
We got to collaborate. We'll talk about that off the air.
Well, we have already, but we will some more.
More collaborations, dude. All right, brother. Love and light to you, man. Thank you so much. I'm going to just play a minute of this song, Shine, and we're going to sign out. Thank you guys very much. We'll see you guys next week.
Into the moonlight in the night when she screams, I waited all, it's time to see you believe. And now we're here, I'm faded, one with the sun. I'll keep you in the middle of my heart when I'm young. And when the moon starts rising and she kisses my ear, she's begging me to come and see I'm already here. She says I really want to love you, this can't be the end. But if you do this, we'll never be the same again. Still I reach for her thigh, and don't be so surprised to see that storm in her eyes. Open up your door, I wanna feel you now. Open up your door, I need to feel you now.
Thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys next week. Matt, you've been a wonderful guest. On behalf of Sam and myself, we'll see you guys next week. Thank you. Tune in next Tuesday, 8 o'clock. Thank you, Matt. Keep doing what you do, man. We love you, dude. Peace and love.
Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence. Right here on LA Talk Radio.